Hey, everybody, we're back with another Bald Move TV. It's been a while. We are talking, well, I guess it hasn't been that long.
Couple weeks. Yeah, before that, it was a real long while.
Getting back in the swing of things. With AMC's The Terror.
The Terror, as my dad would call it.
The Terror. This is a psychological thriller. It's a horror film. It's a good period piece drama. It's the fictionalized account of what happened to the famous Lost Franklin expedition to the Arctic that launched in 1845 and remained largely a mystery until the mid or until the early 21st century when, in I think 2014, they found the wreck of the Erebus. And then a couple years after that, they found the Terror. And I think at this point, everyone kind of largely knows what happened and all that, but they don't know the details, and this is where the Terror comes in.
And when you say everyone, you mean historians of the sea? Like, because I had never heard anything about this before.
I had heard, I didn't know it because I didn't start, I very strongly wanted to avoid researching the real life historical account because I was afraid it would spoil me, and it would have. But I remember, because this kind of blew up in the mid-80s because they found the bodies of the first three sailors that died, the ones that, like, the kid that dies and, you know, he has the ring in the first episode. Like, they dug up their bodies, exhumed their bodies, and they were in almost perfect condition. Like, their skin was still skin-colored. It was perfectly preserved. They had eyes in their eye sockets. Like, and I remember being haunted by the, you know, 2020 and Nat Geo specials my mom and dad would watch on this of these, like, incredibly realistic, very creepy ice mummies. So I was familiar with it, but when I say, I guess everyone, yes. Like, you know,
people who are tuned into the history of exploration.
Yeah. And the Northwest Passage and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of weird because I thought this would be like right up my alley and I always knew I would watch it. But what took me by surprise is the fact that you got into it and like you were way ahead of me throughout the whole process.
Yeah, no, a lot of people were talking about how good this was. I had seen some previews while we were covering The Walking Dead for it and it looked pretty good. It had Jared Harris, most importantly, I think is maybe the thing that pushed me over the edge because he's become, between you know his work in Mad Men and The Expanse, he's become one of my favorite actors in the last few years. So yeah, I decided to check it out, and I was just really engaged from episode one.
Yeah, I mean, this is a who's who of famous British actors that you've seen on Game of Thrones and Mad Men because like you've got Ciaran Hinds, who played Mance Rayder. Sir John Franklin, the expedition commander.
As I refer to him, the other captain. but I guess the whole expedition named after this guy, yeah? He was kind of the senior.
He's the, I guess, the commander of the mission. Yeah. Jared Harris plays Captain Francis Crozier, who is a long-term experienced polar explorer. Tobias Menzies, playing Commander James Fitzjames. He was Tully. Edmure Tully. I know there's a lot of other people that I recognize here as well, but like, you know, up top you've got a lot of beef. And it's right up my alley in that it's like set kind of in the exact transition point between the Age of Sail and like the modern steel hull steam slash coal slash, you know, non-natural propulsion, because these were two Age of Sail ships that they essentially had the Royal Navy had outfitted with like steel plating and reinforced timbers and then dropped retired locomotives into to give them a steam drive that was capable of like 4 or 5 knots when there's no wind, but they also had masts. So and like I really really enjoyed the exploration and how utterly real everything felt. Like, I'm sure all this stuff is on soundstage and there's matte paintings and digital compositions, but like it really sells the idea of men being stuck on the ice for years and uses a lot of like real world information we know about the expedition to like plausibly construct these different horrific narratives, and really, you know, like these are men suffering from scurvy and long-term isolation and potentially lead poisoning, are they hallucinating? Is there really something haunting them and trying to kill them?
Mm-hmm.
They're battling personal demons as well. It was just like when it wasn't scary, it was fascinating. When it wasn't fascinating, it was terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing that really struck me about this show is it's genuinely scary.
Yeah.
In a way that I don't know that I've seen on many other television shows.
Right.
There's a kind of dread to the whole scenario that's pervasive through the show. And then there are moments where it's punctuated and, you know, just really heightened and becomes a thing that they have to deal with. But it's constantly there in the background, just sort of churning away at them.
Yeah. But it's like you're talking about this lost expedition where 130 men go into the North Pole and they never come back, and that's spooky. And then one of the ships is called the Terror.
Yeah,
get out of here, get out of here. Like that's just too perfect. And there's a couple like standout scenes from the very beginning of the show, so like it's not too spoilery. But like at one point, a big piece of ice gets stuck in the screws of one of the ships, and they send this guy in a diving suit on this little bench to go clear it. And like what it's like to be a man underneath several feet of ice and it's just inky black sea all around you.
Yeah.
Like what might you see down there? And like my heart's racing the entire scene.
Yep.
Because something's going to happen. There's no way you set this up and it just looks so fucking real and you can only see out of these soup can size holes on like 4 points in your helmet. What could sneak up behind you? It's like, so good.
Yeah, and you can't swim back up. You're at the mercy of the people above you, right? They have the system where you pull on the rope and we'll get you back up, but it's a slow process.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're in immediate danger the whole
and like
time.
Like what if that rope cut because you just like you got lead shoes and this big heavy belt bottom or if I mean it's just bad news all around.
They do a great job of mixing like the supernatural potential for horror and also the very real danger that they're in.
And there's lots of what I think is interesting is that they keep you guessing pretty late into the series about is this a cultural misunderstanding with the Inuit? Is this guys losing their mind because of alcoholism or isolation? Is this the lead poisoning eating their brain? Is this, you know, there's so many plausible reasons for, like, you know, is this just like a fucking polar bear and men's imaginations run wild? That happens with sailors. They see a fucking the manatee and they think it's Ariel from Little Mermaid. Like and people's imaginations do run wild. I thought that was great because, you know, the older I get, I like just pure supernatural horror. It's got its charms, but I much prefer stuff that's like, you're just not sure.
Yeah.
You're just not sure because like people being panicky animals is as terrifying as things need to get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you got a ghosty ghost in there, fine. I feel like at this point, what else do we want to do to pitch someone that hasn't seen the show to try to get them interested in seeing the show without spoiling it? Because I kind of want to get spoily.
How about this? It very much felt to me like a self-contained story. Like you're not in it for a huge investment of time.
It's 9 episodes?
I think it's 10.
Might be 10.
It's 10 episodes and they're 45 minutes each.
Yep.
And that's kind of a self-contained story. So now I hear this is going to be an anthology series and maybe we can talk about that later, but you know, if you're looking for a resolution to this story, I think there is one at the end, so that might excite you. I don't know.
Because like, you know, I feel it more as much as anybody, the commitment to I'm joining this show and God knows how many seasons and all that. But like, if it is an anthology, it's going to be an anthology, I hope, like any other one is, where you can watch one or two or three. You don't have to watch the whole thing to enjoy this particular one. And this first season, like when you said it was an anthology, it shocked me because like if it's an anthology, it might be like other expeditions that have gone wrong you know, the true story about Apollo 13 where Tom Hanks actually met a scary poltergeist in space. Like, it might be something like that, but they're not going to literally, you know...
Yeah, I don't think they're going to tell more.
It's not
going to
be Jared Harrison and Igloo or something. Like, all right, so if you want to watch the show, and I highly recommend it because it's great, spooky, late night, lights out watching... then you should do so. You can watch it, I think, the whole thing on AMC TV now. You can certainly rent it on Amazon, which is what I did. But yeah, you should do that, because now we're going to get we're gonna get real spoilery.
Oh, yeah. There are several scenes that I just really, really love and I'm dying to talk about, but where do you want to start with this?
Well, yeah, you got notes. I just got finished watching it last night. Let's hear what you got to say.
The point where I was really like, oh, this is something special, was I think the Carnival stuff. Like once they started getting into the idea of lead poisoning, driving the people mad, and how that kind of culminated for the group as a whole in the Carnival stuff, that was just such a fucked up... They do a lot of fucked up things, but it was like one of the defining fucked up things in the show.
Yeah.
Is this... it's the doctor at the time, right? Who goes crazy.
McDonald?
Yeah. I don't know if it's not like Goodsir or Crozier, I don't know their names, or Hickey. But I think it's the doctor at the time, just sort of... I think he like half goes mad and half doesn't want to see everyone else go mad. And so he tries to take everyone out at Carnival with a fire.
Like a mercy killing almost.
Yeah, which was both beautiful and extremely fucked up and disturbing.
Yeah. Well, it's also like to be like there's something very fucked up about being on fire entombed in ice.
Uh-huh.
Like
it's very strange.
Yeah, how can that's like, you know, how can a fire Pokemon beat an ice Pokemon? But it's happening and you're stuck in the middle of it.
And then like later on the I don't know who he is, but the guy who is desperately trying to deal with his cannibalistic tendencies.
Uh-huh.
The guy who feels himself sort of turning, like the way he describes
that
scene.
He's the guy
that
was in the diving suit, I think.
He
is the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like the one who first started to lose his mind.
No, his description of the men roasting and the smell of the cooking meat
and how
his
good
mouth
it smelled and...
goes from dry to wet when he smelled it. Uh-huh. It was just so fucking... I mean, even those conversations are terrifying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can see it on Goodsir's face when he's trying to... I don't know, help this man deal with these unnatural cravings, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And how also, man, that whole scene of, like, Goodsir telling McDonald what he'd found about the lead poisoning and the effects it's going to have on the men and how, I mean, it's, yeah, like, you're just fucked. Like, not only has the majority of your food gone bad because the sloppy preservation and all that, but, like, what little is just... poisoning with lead, the water system's poisoning with lead, and he kind of like blows him up. And then this other guy just comes in to talk to Dr. McDonald, and he's like, oh, just go to the, you know, just you need to cheer up, go to the Carnival, that's going to be what ails you. And that this guy's reaction of like, you know, being told this by a doctor and this like, you're not helping me at all, but like there's nothing
else
more
can
to say.
And
then you find out McDonald's plan was just to burn them all.
Uh-huh.
Like, man, that's some deep, deep, scary stuff. To me, this show has like three different acts. There is essentially before Franklin dies.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is the act where Crozier just tries to drink himself to death because he doesn't know, like, this, you know, it's almost like he's angry at Franklin for checking out and leaving him with the mess that he made.
Yeah.
Like, he begged him not to do this. And I thought it was so cool that, like, the night of him essentially committing mutiny to try to save these men, Franklin dies. And then so there's the drunk period where he's just a real souse. And then there's the time where he dries himself out and becomes the captain that they need.
Yeah.
But it's too little, too late, and just they are stacked against the entire Arctic, and he's not going to be able to win. But to me, I don't know. Like, none of... It's so weird because none of those acts are particularly rewarding.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like this show doesn't really do its best work in the big moments. Like, it doesn't have, like, a ton of big moments. I can think of three.
Yeah.
Essentially. Like, Carnival is one. Hickey killing, you know, the Inuits is another.
Yeah.
And then you know, something near the end, I guess, with the...
The last stand of Hickey and the Crozier monster, versus the monster, yeah.
Those are, like, the big moments I can think of, but everything in between is just permeated by this sense of dread and death.
And that's why I said, like, it's, like, none of these... It's... I don't want to say that watching the show is not rewarding, but it's rewarding just in, like, this bleak majesty.
Yeah.
Of just excellence and empathy and like what it's like to be there. It's not like you feel a stirring call of adventure or something, like, you know, you understand humanity better or anything. It's just this monument to this very particular time period and this very particular type of men. And I loved it, but it kind of was like right up my alley, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It seemed so beyond the horror aspects. What are the things that you enjoyed about it?
I loved Jared Harris's performance. I do like the scenes where, you know, he essentially says, look, I'm going to be the death of these men. They're relying on me. I'm drinking myself to death. And I got to get off that. And I need you to take over for a while, James.
Right.
James, I think one of the best moments in the whole series is James' confession about his own courage. You know, how he doesn't view himself as having any courage whatsoever. His driving force has always been shame and vanity.
Right.
I think that was just a really well-constructed scene, because he doesn't come right out and say, these are the things that I'm dealing with at the beginning, or this is why I'm doing everything I'm doing. He kind of breadcrumbs his way into it and then eventually has this big confession.
Yeah.
And I love Jared Harris's, Crozier's response to it. You know, he doesn't try and say, well, you're an okay person for doing all that. He simply lets it be and tells him that you'll have to find a new source for your courage now, because you have no vanity left, and there's no room for vanity here.
Right.
And James knows it.
That was a dance these characters make, because, like, the real progression in terms of things happening is just the characters' understanding of themselves and each other. Because,
yes,
you know, they were natural rivals for this older man's attention and approval. I guess FitzJames wanted it, and Crozier is just like, you're trying too hard, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, you're trying to be the thing that I already am.
Yeah.
And then, like, I thought it was really great, Crozier, Jared Harris's confession about him being, like, everyone already knew, like, even his loyalist, most staunch defenders are getting disgusted with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that, where he calls the staff meeting and he's, like, using the last of the alcohol to give him the control to say, like, I'm going to be down for perhaps a week, maybe two.
Yeah.
Maybe much longer. And I'm going to need you, this man who's hated me and who's gained and questioned my judgment and have tried to do everything opposite the whole way. I'm going to need you to hold it together while I'm indisposed.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was going to that's going to be a train wreck. But no, like this FitzJames character, what surprised me at, like, how much it grew to like him. And then when he did the confession, it kind of only worked because of Crozier laying his own soul bare and saying, like, well, yeah, I'm a drunk and an alcoholic and I'm not fooling anybody, and this is good. But him saying, like, you know, how low he was, and he's just like this bastard lowborn that has just been, like you said, driven by shame his whole life.
And they did an amazing job of taking that character, FitzJames, who I did not like at the beginning. You're not supposed to.
No,
He's kind of a brown-nosing
dandy
dick. Yeah.
Yeah.
And turning him into a character who is incredibly sympathetic. And when he finally dies,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of a heartbreaking scene, it's, you know? I mean, especially, like, with the state he's in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can see him. And then I think it's Crozier who is kind of over him, giving him the whatever substance, whatever liquid he's mm-hmm. pouring into his mouth to kill him.
Lead water.
Essentially. Lead water. Let's just speed this up a little. I loved all of the stuff that happened with those two characters.
There's a lot of other similar arcs. Like, the other one is Good Sir, who is this like scientist and intellectual and just gentleman. Like, his name is Good Sir, and that's pretty much what he is. He's a doctor, he's a healer, and how everything is just dehumanizes him. Like, he sees these men ripped in half by this wild animal. He sees like these men being brutally beaten,
and the way they're treating the Inuit.
The way they're treating the Inuits, and he's just wanting to understand. And then the final indignity is when they make him not only butcher a man to eat, but then make him eat on pain of someone else dying.
Yeah,
just to debase him, just to make so you're not like Hickey's like you're not. Like Hickey's is like a Batman villain. Like, I am the biggest shit in the world, and I want everyone to know that you're not better than me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to prove it by, like, doing all this crazy stuff. Like, the fact that he wouldn't, like, relinquish what it was to that made him good. But it's also kind of heartbreaking at the end, because when, you know, Crozier's trying to be like, hey, you know, my lieutenant, I know what kind of man he is. Lieutenant Little, he's going to come back for us. When they just showed the scene where that's not going to happen.
Uh-huh.
Like, the rest of his men is like, we prefer the captain's original orders.
Yeah.
That there's no hope there. And, like, it seemed like Good Sir has given up hope.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know why. And then you realize that he's poisoned himself so he can kill all these animal men.
Yeah.
What a tragic arc for a very good person.
It is, yeah. Let me ask you about the arc of Hickey here. It's not a huge arc, right? He doesn't end up in a completely different place.
Yeah.
But I felt, I don't know if this was intentional, but I felt very little connection to him, even though I think we're supposed to early on.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're supposed to sympathize with him, you know, until they reveal that he's essentially taken a man's identity and he was not there for the right purposes.
Right.
And then he eventually, let me ask you this, eventually goes crazy?
I think that's fair.
Okay.
Because
I think there's a point where he goes out with this scouting party, mm-hmm. they find the Inuits, and he brutally kills
mm-hmm. his own men,
and then the Inuits come and attack, and they kill them all.
Right.
According to him.
Right.
You know, that's not actually what happened. But,
right.
So I think that's the moment where a lot of people said, oh, he went crazy. But I don't think that's true. I think this is a very calculated plan to undermine the success that Crozier has had, because Crozier has just found what he promised.
Mm-hmm.
They've just found what Crozier promised them they would find, which is help.
Right.
So I don't think he goes crazy there. I think he's got a very calculated plan. But the music there is almost doing too much heavy lifting.
Hmm.
The music makes it seem like this man has lost his fucking mind.
Right.
And that the whole world is off its axis.
Right.
I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
I think he loses his mind somewhere along the way between there and worshiping this fucking monster, you know?
So Hickey's interesting, and I felt conflicted throughout, because I liked him in the third act, the first act, where he was this, like, closeted homosexual that, you know, is being shamed and manipulated, and I'm like, I'm totally on this guy's side. And then, like, they do the whole trope of, like, the murderous criminal homosexual is what it felt like. And I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that. And then they kind of, like, backburnered all that and made him to be crazy. But I agree. Like, to me, that was more of his pathos of, like, wait, this guy's telling the men that these bloodthirsty savages are going to be our salvation. They're going to be open-handed and generous with us. And mm-hmm. I'm seeing that, and I'm actually literally seeing it happen. And I can't, like, if I allow any good in this world, then it's going to refute my evil. But so I guess he is kind, like, he is crazy in a certain particular way.
Well, I think he just doesn't believe. It's weird. He's believed in his own plan so long and disbelieved in Crozier's that when Crozier starts to come true, he wants to deny the truth of that plan and continue on his own path.
Because it refudiates his, like, ever, right. like I had to do this because I was born a certain way.
Sure, it would make him into a monster, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because if you can say, like, well, I was forced to do all these things and you're all weak for not doing
Survival is dirty business, you know?
But if you can, like, through cooperation and hard work and brotherhood overcome, then he is a monster. And I agree, because, like, my wife and I had that debate. Like, she's like, when he was doing all these maniacal things to, like, Crozier and Dr. Goodsir at the end, she's like, I don't believe a guy as crazy as him would be able to keep things together this well. And I'm like, I don't think he's crazy. Mm-hmm. I think he's just, well, he's crazy in the way like a sociopath CEO is crazy.
Sure.
You know, yeah. Or anyone that like weighs human lives and decides
still very
mine's
rational,
more important than
still
I'm
very calculated, but just working toward a goal that is foolish.
But then they added the, like, to me, they're all over the place with Hickey. The other thing I'd be remiss is like how disturbingly like an evil version of our friend Jesse Wilson he looks like.
He does.
Like every single time he's on, I'm like, this is like, it's going to be scary when I go back to Seattle knowing what a madman I'm dealing with, just hanging on by a thread, and he works at Lovecraft Brewery. This is bad. This is bad news.
Don't go on any expeditions with him.
I thought him trying to like ensorcel the monster at the end was a very, like, it's almost like the show. I thought the show had taught me that this guy wasn't insane, but then his last act was insanity.
I think he goes fully insane at the end.
And maybe that's the thing, like, you know, the lead and the scurvy and all that had finally overtaken him. I don't know.
Let me ask you this. So at the end,
Okay, go ahead. You ask me, because I want to talk about this polar bear monster, but what do you guys talk about?
I want to talk a little bit more about the lead poisoning real quick.
Okay.
So at the end of this, Crozier ends up pretty much okay. He goes off with, you know, his Inuit friends and lives with them, becomes one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Seemingly mostly unaffected by the lead poisoning. Why would that be? Is he eating different food than the rest? As the captain, would he be eating not from the tin cans?
I think it's like it depends.
Or just a personal resilience. Like,
I don't know, because, you know, as we were discussing at lunch today, the scientists are kind of all over the place about what they think is the thing that happened to this expedition.
That's fair, but the show clearly
pushes the lead poisoning. I guess my thought is, like, I think that lead poisoning, like, can't that eventually, like lead poisoning seems like it's really bad for children because it affects their development. It leaves them prone to aggression, emotional outbursts, psychosis.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons, like, the poor stay poor in this country, because, you know, when we were outlawing lead and everything, all the middle class and above children got their pipes replaced and cleaned up, and you're still, you know, eating lead chips because they're sweet.
Right.
And then when they outlaw asbestos, you're living in a house with asbestos. And oh, by the way, if you're in Flint, now you got lead in your pipe. Like, that's the, just to editorialize for a bit, that's the insane thing about Flint, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know what effects lead has on children.
Yeah.
All those, we've got a whole lost generation in that city that's going to have severe clinical, cultural, civilization problems, and it's still like if you're still drinking bottled water, like the problem's still there. What the fuck? I don't know. Like, I guess as an adult, I feel like that will eventually clear your system.
Right, but even over the course of their journey, he didn't seem that affected.
Is it because the alcoholism protected him?
Yes.
It turns out,
alcohol
it's antagonistic
and
lead to
lead
binding. It could be. I mean, I don't know.
Just flushed it right out of his system.
Like, everyone's got like also a higher, like, you know, like if it makes you more prone to emotional outbursts, like if you're an exceptionally stoic person, maybe that you would have more to lose before you go crazy.
I don't know. I feel like you end up like the diver.
Hmm.
Going that kind of crazy.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, I feel like that they showed
that they put you
everyone
on cocaine.
As at different levels of everything was at different levels of like sensitivity.
They were. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, cause the other thing I did when I was reading, cause I finished a show at like 11:30 last night. Mm-hmm. And then I watched an hour and a half documentary on the expedition.
Oh,
and then I probably spent another 45 minutes just reading.
Yeah.
What I got was that, there's like degrees to lead poisoning and scurvy. Like, if you are like a normal human fights off tuberculosis and it goes away and it's locked away in cyst in your lungs and whatnot. But the thing about scurvy, and it seems incredible, but it's well attested that like your teeth start falling out, your gums start bleeding, your hair falls out. But not only that, old wounds start opening. Like, the scar tissue begins to break down, and, like, you can bleed from old gunshot wounds and things of that nature. And like,
well,
also,
then you would think the Crozier's liver would just be a fucking
right, it'd
mess.
Be a shit show. Yeah. But like the fact that this kid died of tuberculosis, something he might have gotten over as a teenager, but now his, you know, it like it, your immune system is so suppressed. I guess these men, like, they were all suffering from some state. They've done samples on them. They're all lead poisoned to some extent. They're all suffering from scurvy, but they also have a severe zinc deficiency.
Yeah.
Which is another thing that promotes healing and your immune system. And it could be that they just all.
I hear that was like their distilled water systems were filtering out.
They were
something like the zinc that they needed, or.
Well, there's also. I mean, I don't know about that, but they're that they say that the lead of the food was not nearly the contributor of the lead poisoning as the lead line tank system, the water distillation system they used.
Yeah.
Because they had to distill just an incredible amount of water because the steam engines themselves needed it.
Yeah.
As a byproduct, they're like, these ships had central heating, like, for the comfort of the men, and it could make a bunch of fresh water. And maybe if you're only drinking it for a year, you'd be fine. But drinking this stuff that's essentially hot water through galvanized lead tanks is going to elevate. But that's the thing. Like, the other thing I did in my research is scientists are – it's still an ongoing concern what exactly led this thing to be a disaster. How much of it was – you know, the hubris of the commanders, how much of it was, like, for example, many, many things I've read show that these men had this, like, weird fanatical need to take all these possessions with them.
Mm, yeah, like the dishes.
Like not just the, and like the Inuits that they interviewed were always just like, yeah, these crazy guys pushing these boats. So, like, it'd be one thing if you, like, stripped it all down and just had, like, the food that you needed. But, like, they were taking the books and the silverware and the china and their personal possessions because that was what's important to them. And it's funny because Crozier mentioned, like, well, let's just let the men in some point in the way they will willingly give up this thing. But, man, it seemed like it was at the very bitter end before they started – you start seeing the trail of debris where they were just like, oh, we can't keep going on. All that stuff is fictionalized, though, because no one knows exactly where and when the bulk of them died and – I don't know where I was going with all that, but yeah, it's the fact that scientists, you know, because when I was growing up as a kid and the ice zombies were a big thing, and it's crazy because you can see like the first kid they buried looks exactly like the mummy, and but they did these samples, like the when I was growing up, it's like, well, it's lead poisoning, they didn't know any better, they had these lead soldered tins and that killed them all. And then scientists like, well, yeah, they were lead poisoning, but not at the height that, like, it would be to, like, really be debilitating. So they started looking at other reasons, and who knows? Maybe they'll come do additional samples or go back to lead poisoning. I feel like that's up in the air, but I thought the show did a good job of kind of, like, throwing all that at the wall.
Yeah.
Scurvy, zinc deficiency, lead poisoning from the food and from the water, isolation, hubris. Like, it was all in this big stew. Poor health and disease. It was, and the other thing that the documentary pointed out is these men were incredibly unlucky because they know from ice core samples, you can tell, like, when the surface ice melts and refreezes because it makes different variations of light and dark bands in ice. This 30 years centered on the expedition is the coldest that the Arctic Circle has been for 700 years.
That sucks.
They happen to go in there, and like the fact that for several years the sea ice never broke up even in the summer. That's like, you know, was unheard of at the time. And
yeah, they
and
kept waiting for a couple years for the ice to break up.
Yeah,
and they can get out of there, and then never happened.
That's what made the fateful, like when Franklin, like, he's like, come on, you know, Crozier, that the ice will break up and we'll find the Northwest Passage. And he's like, or, because his plan is like, everyone go aboard the Terror, the one undamaged ship we got, and let's steam for warmer climates so we can save everybody. And There's a lot of I don't know if it's historical fact, but like the fact that this Franklin might not have been the best guy for the job and was passed over, and he felt like he had something to prove, and there was this personal history between him and Crozier, which I found fascinating, that he'd kind of interrupted his courtship because Crozier was a Irish base-born kind of guy.
Yeah.
At the time and night, but he's never going to be like accepted into polite society.
Right.
All that stuff was, I thought, great spice for their relationship. But I was, I mean, in early goings, I was shocked at how frequently the deaths were coming. Like, the fact that they killed the commander in, like, the first three or four episodes, I thought was like, wow.
Yeah, I actually was not connecting with him nearly as much as I connected with Crozier.
No.
So I'm kind of glad they ditched him as the commander. I mean, right. I don't know. This is historically accurate, I'm sure.
Right.
But yeah, I'm glad it went down that way, because Crozier, I thought, was a much more interesting character.
Well, it's funny because I guess this book, The Terror, is largely based on archaeology and
logs, right?
Karn, where they like visited three different times and said, you know, like, here's what's happening. You know, three sailors died the first year, but all is well. Second, we've lost our commander and nine officers and 12 men. And the third, where I forget what happened, like what was going on there, but like you just keep getting more and more bad news, and then it goes silent, and we never see these guys until we recover their ships and some of their graves, and we've seen some of their artifacts and stuff. But like, I want to talk about this polar bear monster.
Me too.
I kind of wish they had just made ambiguous whether it was an exceptionally large polar bear or whether it was, like, at the end, they made it very clear that this was essentially some kind of shamanistic avatar for the Inuit's rage.
I didn't like its face.
Yeah, no, the CG I thought was, like, in distance when it was moving, I thought it looked really cool, but, like, I wish they'd kind of left it ambiguous whether this was just an exceptionally large polar bear, but they give it, like, a weird human face.
Yeah,
and
didn't really like that. But
yeah, like the whole cutting the tongues out to try to bind it, like, you know, that. But I feel like they really put the thumb on the scale for this is a supernatural phenomenon.
Yeah.
And I kind of could have gone without that.
I agree.
But I did like at the end where Jared Harris's character, Crozier, made the decision to just, like, he's too far gone. He's seen too much fucked up stuff. He just wants to stay in the Arctic Circle with these Inuit people that he's, like, I guess he even has children with at this point. He's moved fast in a few, three, because, like, I think that the expedition that was led by Ross, the guy who the ice shelf is named after, I think that's who led the rescue mission. They got there like 5 years after the expedition started, which is like 2 years after things went real pear shaped. And Jared Harris had already had, like, looked like he already had kids and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but I don't know. That's the one only real criticism I have on the show.
One of the other things I want to talk about is the sound design in the show, because I think it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are two, essentially two environments in this show. Well, maybe three if you count the boat itself, like inside.
Okay, yeah,
but,
for sure.
Yeah. But the ones that really stood out to me were the ice and the shale.
The
rocky, endless ocean of shale. Yeah.
Gravel islands, yeah.
The sound design is so good. Like, there's this weird warbly effect to every footstep they take on that stuff when you get those wide shots.
Mm-hmm.
Of just, like, this sliding, shifting rock ground that really just put me in the place, you know? And they also do that with the ice where, like, you're dragging this boat across this ice, and everything is just echoing back at you when you're in these sort of, like, I guess canyons of ice and stuff, and it just really puts you in the place that they're in,
right? And it's how exhausting it must be to like hearing all that grinding. It's like these men are being ground down as well as the rocks under their boats. Why do people live there?
Because,
like, I kept thinking
somebody,
like,
fucked up 100,000 years
like,
ago.
Are these Inuits? Are they the assholes, or the people down south? Like, at some point, like, they could just walk south.
Yeah,
but there must be just the people living down south must be assholes, or they would.
Some Neanderthal's uncle fucked up 100,000 years ago, got lost, went too far north.
But they could just walk south at any point.
Had a baby with his wife and just said, "This is our land."
Yeah. And I don't know, like, if I just think it's wild that, like, I get, like, where people would, like, temporarily be there or something, but, like, why the fuck would you make your, I mean, you can live there.
You can.
It just seems like a very rough, brutal life.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, maybe it's better than being with a whole bunch of crazy Iroquois or, you know, they're like, it's like, yeah, you think polar bears are bad, wait till you deal with the Cherokee. Those Cherokees, straight up assholes. There's tons of them. You see how the Native Americans are living down there? Just elbow to asshole. Look at all the space we got.
That's what I think of when I think of the nomadic tribes of North America. I think of how much space they didn't have. How much bounty they
like,
were.
I get that humans can live about anywhere, but why? Yeah. Like now it's like we're dealing with population, but a couple hundred years ago, none of that was true. Why? Why did you live here? Why did you live in the desert?
Yeah, no, it's a fair question.
You Bedouin?
I wouldn't want to.
Why didn't you just walk out of the desert and be like, hey, green shit here, this new place. Pitch your tents here without
leaving.
Follow
the green, everybody. You're in a desert, you're on an ice shelf, follow the green.
I just think it's because the world is just full of assholes, and like you just had to get, if you wanted to walk south and be like, hey, it's warm down here, there's already someone there like, hey, keep walking, pal. Keep walking.
That hasn't gotten any better.
No, guess not. But yeah, just the fact that people like just lived up there all the time. And mm-hmm. also the whole, I thought it was really powerful, the last sunset and then how many months they had to wait for the sun to come back.
Yeah.
Like I get a touch of seasonal affective disorder. My wife has it worse, but like, can you imagine 4.5-5 months of freezing cold temperature mm-hmm. and no sunlight?
Yeah, it's brutal. Being stuck in a cramped boat with 100 other people or however many.
Yeah, for years. And, you try to get the men's hope pinned to, it's going to freeze out in the summer or it's going to thaw out in the summer, and then it just doesn't.
Yeah.
And then your boat starts getting lifted. And, I liked that when the boat started to begin to tilt and, they rope shit down and, had these little ledges so, things wouldn't slide off of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other thing is, if you watch these documentaries, it's crazy how pristine these wrecks are. They're in 40, 50 feet of water. The masts have been broken off by ice flows. But when you see the sonar, it's recognizably the ship. And it's essentially intact, and it's just sank. Once the sea ice did break up, it just sank right to the bottom. I think the Terror and the Erebus are only 50 miles apart from each other.
Huh.
It's great. I kind of want to read the book that it's based on.
Yeah.
To see if it's better, what is all about. But I was just impressed by the ability for them to consistently build a mood and track. There's probably half dozen characters that we get to know very well by the end, out of this giant crew, and how long they kept the mystery of the pole. I wish they'd kept it going just a little bit longer. Terror was great.
It was. I'll definitely watch a season 2 if it comes out.
Yeah, if it's got the same people attached to it.
Yeah.
I wish I'd gotten on a little early. I will say that I don't think this would have been a great week-to-week bald move, though. Do you think it would have been good weekly podcasting?
I don't know. There are certainly big moments that we could have, got excited about, but...
I mean, the fact that it's a historical thing where you knew, there's no way... I was able to avoid reading up on it because I essentially binged this over the course of a week and I just chose not to. But there's no way over the course of 10 weeks someone wouldn't have said, all these people die.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of what they set you up when, again, I think it's Captain Ross is talking to the Inuit in the beginning and you find out the Crozier, he was the last survivor. And so, you kind of know that everyone's going to die. I was trying to think of, would this been interesting? It would have been interesting to chart the course of how he felt about Crozier and Hickey.
Uh-huh.
Because in the beginning, I didn't find Crozier very likable. And I was kind of outraged at his command once he essentially didn't get his way with his captain. And then once he did and he sent off his mission, but then he just drank himself to death. Trying to drink himself to death. That was at a very nadir point in his character, but then he brought it back around. And again, mm-hmm. yeah, Jared Harris. Incredible performance here. There was other kind of weird things is they tried to make Franklin's wife into a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess his niece was interesting in that she had this relationship with Crozier, but the whole his wife, with the Board of Admiralty and then the, Royal Science Academy trying to drum up all this support for the rescue mission. I felt like that was a lot to do about nothing because it didn't end up mattering really.
Yeah.
You could have not set any of that up and just showed Englishmen following up years later to try to figure out what happened and that, But on the other hand, without those two scenes, like, there would be zero women in the project at all.
That's true, yeah.
It'd be another Master and Commander situation where it's just, it's not only does it fail the Bechdel test, it doesn't even, it declines to take it.
I guess I'm kind of okay with that in these historical scenarios. Because there wouldn't have been any women on the ship, obviously.
Certainly.
So I guess that's okay. They did
have the Inuit woman that I thought was really remarkable. Yeah. But unfortunately, she gets her tongue cut out like in the first third. Uh-huh. So she's mute the rest of this. I mean, the fact that she can like emote and tell a story like with simple things, like the fact that she like, cuddled Good Sir when he was at like the lowest point in his story. Well, the lowest point thus far. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really great. Mm-hmm. All right, so there's the terror.
Actually, one other thing, they do really well with like, I guess the battle between informing the men and keeping up morale.
Right.
I thought that was one of the highlights of the series. Actually, is all of the decisions that Crozier has to make and needs his men to help him make.
Mm-hmm.
In order to try to keep this group together and the sort of battle there.
Right.
I found it fascinating.
Yeah, it's like another additional resource you have to manage. You have to manage food and fuel and the ship's hull and upkeep and the men's morale because, that's the thing that I really like about the Patrick O'Brien books is that's like when things go bad, like it's so easy for the men to just turn if they start getting hungry or they start feeling like you don't like there's no way of getting like the things get hopeless and they start breaking into the spirit room and getting drunk and wanting to arm themselves, like things go bad really quick, and a good commander is not his maximizing of things going right, it's also his minimizing of things going wrong and always maintaining a cheerful attitude and making sure his officers are cheerful and like, because like if you see the officers start giving each other gallows looks, then the men are like, we're fucked, and all discipline goes by the wayside.
Yeah, and the information control that's required for that, then they find their rescue party dead. When they find out about the lead poisoning, and then the interesting wrinkle there is, Hickey's got the spy, and Hickey's finding these things out and using that against
him.
He's
the worst person to do it, too.
Exactly, yeah. I thought all that was fascinating.
Yeah. Yep. Good show. I'm curious to see. Where did you hear that was going to be... where did you see that this was going to be a...
On our forums, people were talking about an anthology. Yeah.
Because that's the thing. Like, I mean, I'm down for an anthology with these people attached to it, but... I can't see it.
Doesn't look like anything's confirmed yet.
All right. But yeah, it's like I said, go see it. It's on. You can see it a variety of places. It's it wrapped up its broadcast on AMC last week. I'm very curious to see what these people come up with next. I noticed that the developer was David Kajgenek.
Yep, that guy. Kajgenek.
But Ridley Scott was involved. Favorite. He did there was a little like 5 minute, like, if you rent it on Amazon, there's like a little 5 minutes like behind the scenes where he was kind of setting up. So he was involved with it. I would like to see what these guys come up with next. It'd be kind of cool. So we will see you on the next Bald Move TV. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
Later.